Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, and welcome to our episode of Third Thursday, a discussion of traditional labor topics and all things labor relations. Each month, we talk about a labor topic to help you prepare for or respond to issues in the traditional labor arena, whether you have a represented workforce or not. Today, we're going to focus on kind of a combined topic, mostly labor relations, but touching on some employment issues as well. In truth, it's a topic that transcends labor and employment. COVID vaccinations and an employer's duty to bargain with a union over a vaccine policy or practice. With me to talk through this issue is Ethan Bacone, an attorney who hails from our Greenville, South Carolina office. Welcome, Ethan.
Good afternoon, Ruthie. Thanks for having me. I'm an associate in the Greenville office, as you said, and I do mostly traditional labor matters in front of the NLRB. And I've been with Ogletree for 2 years exactly today. And you asked me for a fun fact, so I dug deep. I had two pet turtles when I was younger, and 18 months apart, they both ran away.
Okay, that says something about your turtle parenting, I think, but we won't hold that against
Definitely.
You. Okay, well, great. I'm glad you could be with us today. So Ethan, our listeners are quite sophisticated when it comes to bargaining, but in case we have some folks who are new to an employer's obligations under the National Labor Relations Act, why don't you give us a quick review of the duty to bargain generally?
Absolutely. So in a unionized workplace, employers have to be careful implementing a vaccine protocol or policy because the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, considers vaccination policies a mandatory subject of bargaining under the NLRA. Technically, vaccination policies implicate employees' terms and conditions of employment. And even though the pandemic continues, a new vaccine policy would not qualify as an emergency exigency exception to bargaining, which is basically the employer would be saying that it's such an emergent situation, there's such a need for a vaccine that should be allowed to unilaterally implement a policy. Because that standard, the emergency exception, is extremely difficult to meet. But even if your management rights provision in your collective bargaining agreement gives you fairly broad authority to implement rules, policies, or practices, you're likely to still have an obligation to bargain over the effects of any new policy, such as one addressing COVID vaccinations, just simply because even if the contract allows for it, you almost always have to affect bargain on the back end. And I feel like a constant refrain that I'm sure you have as well, Ruthie, is to read the collective bargaining agreement, especially the management rights clause, so that you know what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do.
Before we get to the actual, you know, collective bargaining agreement, part and parcel of any bargaining is usually requests for information from the union to the employer. Given the ongoing challenges related to the pandemic, things, you know, just because our attention is focused in other places, are employers excused from responding to those requests for information?
Great question. So even in the midst of the pandemic, you can't just withhold information or refuse to hold bargaining sessions or just fail to respond to things. There are certain circumstances where you can get extensions and things like that, but you can't just simply cite COVID, especially now that it's, you know, we're a year and a couple months into it. You can't just refuse to do something that you're obligated to do under federal law. But we haven't seen any, you know, requests for information, RFI floodgates open. The union doesn't have any expanded right to information related to the pandemic. They're entitled to the same information they normally are, which is it has to be relevant to the union's representation role. Now that might include some different information now that we're dealing with pandemic stuff. We didn't have any RFIs about wearing masks 18 months ago, but that also doesn't mean that the union can get whatever it wants just because we're in, you know, a health situation. So employers should just do the same analysis as they always do and, you know, make the same determinations based on that analysis.
Those are all really good points, Ethan. And if I can, I'd like to share a few tips I always raise when talking about requests for information or responding to requests for information. So the first one is only provide information or documents that already exist. You're not required to create new documents. So in other words, if the union asks for a chart of, say, 10 pieces of information, and you don't have a chart that has that information already in it, you don't have to create a new document. Now, you may have to give the documents that have that information, but you don't have to put it together and create new documents that don't already exist. Second, providing specific answers to specific questions without more generally satisfies the employer's duty to respond. So for example, in the context of what we're talking about today, if the union asks how many employees tested positive for COVID in the first quarter, you can just answer that by giving, saying 4 or 5, whatever the number is. Third, beware of continuing duties to keep the union apprised or to supplement your answer. And this is going to depend on the nature of the request. So using that same example I just gave, let's say that the union asks for the number of employees who tested positive in the first quarter, and the first quarter is over. You may be able to answer by just saying 3. But if we're still in the middle of the first quarter and the request is how many employees tested positive in the first quarter, and you give the information, you respond halfway through the first quarter, and you get another positive test before the first quarter is over, you're going to have to supplement your answer. So just pay attention that the way the question is asked or the way the request is submitted may have a continuing obligation. Fourth, be sure to respond to all requests. And Ethan, you alluded to this, but even if there's no responsive information or there's no obligation to provide the information requested, unfortunately, I have seen too many regions find merit to ULP charges for a failure to respond, even when the region finds that the union wasn't entitled to the information or the region accepts that no responsive information exists. So what I mean by that is, if you get a request for information and you don't think you're obligated to provide the information or there's no responsive documents, don't just ignore it. Respond to the union and say, you're not entitled to this information because, or there are no responsive documents. But if you just ignore it, you're going to get a ULP charge and technically it will be a violation. And then finally, let me just briefly mention again, because we're talking about COVID and vaccines, let me briefly mention employee medical information. As a general rule, that type of information is usually considered confidential and not subject to disclosure unless released by the employee. You get an employee to sign a release that says it's okay to share my medical information. But there are board cases out there that say the union stands in the shoes of the employee because they're the employee's designated representative, and as such is permitted access to medical information even without the employee's permission. Now, I'm going to say to you, I think that's a fight worth fighting. So if I get a request for medical information, I ask the union to get a release or I go to the employee and ask for a release. And then I may decide whether or not if the union claims, and they're going to cite these cases that are out there, if they claim that they should have access to it anyway, you can make a decision as to whether or not you want to provide it. And I frankly think the board's going to take this position even more often now that we're coming back into a different makeup of the board under President Biden. Okay, so let's talk for a minute about midterm duty to bargain. So Ethan, if an employer is considering some sort of vaccination policy, what do you think are the first steps they should take?
So we'll go back to our traditional labor refrain here. You have to know your contract and you have to know your past practices and what you've done previously. In terms of new policies, new practices, new procedures. And the first thing you look for in any collective bargaining agreement is what the management rights clause says. what does it cover? And the current standard is under the board case MV Transportation, which introduced the contract coverage standard. And contract coverage essentially means that the issue or change or dispute is within the scope of the collective bargaining agreement. Without getting into too much legalese, it's basically just significantly different from the old rule, which required a specific waiver of rights. So in this case, in the old rule, it would have required the contract to say the union waives bargaining for vaccines. Under the current contract coverage standard, there's a lot more flexibility. So you can have language that alludes to some health policy or a vaccine policy for the flu, for example. And you can, you know, work with that rather than having to have the union say, we waive the right to bargain for a COVID-19 vaccine. When you're trying to figure out if you can unilaterally implement a policy, look for broad management rights clauses, other broad rules that grant management certain power, and or just things that don't restrict employers' rights to do things, as well as zipper clauses, which are basically clauses where the union waives certain rights. And in general, if your contract has a strong management rights clause, you may be able to unilaterally implement a wide variety of policies with only, you know, effects bargaining, as we discussed above. You almost always have to do that.
And I think one good point I'm going to put it, I'm a lawyer, typical lawyer, put a kind of a caveat here, that contract coverage standard may change under a Biden board. So, you know, keep watch for that. I have to tell you, Ethan, sometimes it makes me laugh. Absolutely. The first step is always review the CBA. I often get calls from clients who say, hey, can I do this? Can I unilaterally implement this or that? And I always say to them, well, what does your contract say? Always, always is the first step. But I also encourage folks to look at the entire contract, not just the provisions that you suggested, Ethan, because sometimes, as you alluded to, there's hidden language that might be helpful. For example, in relation to a vaccination policy, there might be some language, something useful in your health and safety provisions. You may be some language that gives the employer the right to unilaterally implement all necessary safety rules or procedures, something like that. Okay, let's get to kind of the meat of the topic today. Let's get to the duty to bargain a vaccination policy itself. What are some of the elements in such a policy that employers should consider?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, vaccine policies are going to be a mandatory subject of bargaining. It's one of those things where you have to talk to the union about it. You have to go to the table or the Zoom and discuss it. And so some employers are considering voluntary policies where you just encourage vaccination rather than mandate it. And we've seen that as the majority, if not almost exclusively, employers are pursuing, if they're trying to pursue a vaccine policy, they're almost always pursuing a voluntary policy. And as part of voluntary policies, or even just incentives, employers have been doing things such as gift cards, leave to get the vaccine, and additional leave for any potential side effects. And, you know, just little thank yous for employees for getting the vaccine, which, you know, obviously is a public health issue. And employers are trying to do the right thing by encouraging vaccination in their employees for not only the employee safety, but, you know, the future of country and their businesses. And there are other considerations too, such as the Americans with Disabilities Act and religious accommodations, confidentiality of medical information. And of course, you have to consider what information, if any, the union may want or that's related to the application and implementation of the policy.
And one other thing, you know, I think would be helpful is that if employers, I think they should check with their state and local health departments in the various jurisdictions to determine the timing and methodology for the vaccine distribution in the particular area, because I think that may impact the duration or the application of the policy itself. You know, how long you're going to, if the policy is going to go on forever, if it's going to go on for a certain period of time. What else comes to mind, Ethan, that we should be thinking about if we're going to if we want to implement a vaccination policy and if we have a representative workforce and we have to bargain it.
Well, to add on to your comment about state and local health departments, another great resource is if you have some sort of membership in a local industry group or have close relationships with other related companies, you know, that's always a great starting place too, because everyone is facing these issues and everyone's facing them at the exact same time in the exact same way. And so it's, you know, one of those things where everyone, every single employer has these issues on their mind, especially with the further we get along in the vaccine rollout. And just in general, when you're talking about crafting a vaccine policy, a starting place is always the collective bargaining agreement. So do you have a flu policy, for example, or other vaccination policy? Do you require vaccines in any way, shape, or form? And if the collective bargaining agreement does not allow for unilateral policymaking, you might just consider a basic flu or other vaccine policy as a starting point for developing a COVID policy and for negotiations with the union. So you're taking something that's, you know, already existing in other collective bargaining agreements and showing the union that this, you know, it's already a thing in other places for other employers and other unions. Unions have agreed to this. So you're not starting from scratch and, you know, the union isn't looking at this going, are we agreeing to something that no one else has ever agreed to? You're pulling something from, you know, industry groups and whatever else, other contracts, and being able to show that this is a policy that is established and it will work. And, you know, there's no need to fight over every little thing. You know, it's something that already is out there. And again, even if the union agrees to every single thing or just simply doesn't object, you still may have to do effects bargaining if the union requests it.
Right. So even if your management's rights or somebody thought of it, or maybe you negotiated a policy at the very beginning of COVID, maybe you were in contract negotiations. I just want to reiterate this, that even if you had express language that says the employer has the right to implement a COVID-19 vaccination policy, you still would have an obligation to bargain over the effects. So I think that's a good point to restate. You know, one aspect of vaccination policies that I always seem to get questions about, and frankly, whether it's a COVID vaccination policy, but even if it's just a flu vaccination policy, is whether it's lawful, whether an employer can have a mandatory vaccination policy. I know it's fairly common in industries like healthcare and childcare, maybe not so common in other industries. I do also think that COVID may make employers feel differently about considering a mandatory policy. So, Ethan, any thoughts about mandatory policies?
That's obviously kind of been an interesting issue lately because there's no federal law. So every state has approached this differently. Some states require mandatory vaccines in certain industries, such as, you know, particular healthcare workers working with vulnerable populations. Other states outright prohibit healthcare employers from mandating vaccines. So you kind of have two sides with also a bunch in the middle. So you just have to be careful and be sure to check that your state or jurisdiction doesn't have some sort of ban on mandatory policies or other just restrictions. And we've definitely seen a lot of questions about that too. You know, state laws vary. There's no federal law yet. Some states require mandatory vaccines, such as for influenza and hepatitis B for certain workers, for example, in many healthcare professions. Other states, such as Oregon, prohibit healthcare employers from mandating vaccines. But as of today, most states have no statutory or regulatory rules. There are several proposed, and we're waiting to see what happens with that. But just check to be sure, especially if your operations are in a variety of locations. There could be multiple state laws that will affect any implementation of a policy.
So, Ethan, let's say a mandatory COVID vaccination policy is in fact negotiated with the union. So let's just assume that. How should employers respond to the accommodation issues you mentioned earlier?
Right. So employers should be cognizant of a few different things. And basically, the analysis goes in four stages. First, the employee requests an accommodation for a covered disability or religious belief. Second, the employer and the employee engage in a sort of exchange of information, interactive process. Third, the employer determines the availability of a reasonable accommodation. And fourth, the employer determines whether the accommodation creates an undue burden. And, you know, these are all technical terms, but, you know, the standard for undue burden isn't extremely high, but you still have to show that the accommodation itself would cause an issue in the workplace and a significant burden on the employer in some fashion.
So I think it would be fair to say that if you do this accommodation kind of analysis, that individuals who have either religious objection or request an accommodation around a disability may have it be the exception to a mandatory policy. So what if an employee just doesn't want to get the vaccine and a mandatory policy has been negotiated? What happens then?
Although requests for disability or religious belief accommodations must be vetted and provided if required, personal or ethical objections to vaccines or just an objection in general, none of those require accommodation.
So basically, I think it's safe to say, Ethan, that we would just advise employers to simply follow their normal disability and religious accommodation process and procedure. No need to change or create something new just for a COVID vaccination policy. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think we're just about out of time. Ethan, thank you so much for joining us today. It was really great having you on.
Thank you for having me on.
As our regular listeners know, I always like to send you off with a quote. So I'm going to quote Arlen Specter. He once said, "There's nothing more important than our good health. That's our principal capital asset." At least in my thinking, especially in the context of HR and labor relations, and in thinking about our associates and employees, I think that's certainly accurate. That's all we have for you today. Have a happy spring, and we will see you next month.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.